Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Agreed, or at least on our side, that we clearly have state statute on our side that we can use this. You guys disagree, but we agree with that. Other counties in the state use it. So the state statute's wrong, the sheriff's wrong, the board that voted 5-0 is wrong. We want 1.9% to help the lowest income communities in Escambia County, and you continue to want to push back and fight us. I don't understand this. I don't know why I'm in this conversation. I voted for the Children's Trust. I never in my life thought I'd be fighting for low-income kids for dimes. It's unbelievable to me.
But, sir. But, sir. This is Mike Kohler, Escambia County Commission Chairman, District, I got to think, 2, Southwest side, but not all the Southwest after the redistricting. And he is dug in. And I will acknowledge, I also am dug in, okay? He is just dug in that the $500,000 or so from the $10 million that the Escambia Children's Trust collects needs to come back through the CRAs, which is the community redevelopment areas within the county that are blighted, and it needs to pay for sidewalks and lights and cameras. And he's just 100% convinced. And as you said, I can't believe you're fighting over dimes to help poor kids. Well, okay, first of all, it's not dimes. It's 5% of their annual budget. Out of the Escambia County budget, a $500,000 expenditure out of $800 million would be much, much, much less significant. It really would be dimes. Also, helping poor kids, it's what the Escambia Children's Trust does anyway. All of their programs are there to help poor kids. That's the whole point, is they're there to help the kids who are struggling in school. So it's not, it's a program for these poor kids versus a streetlight or a camera or a sidewalk for these poor kids. It's not no poor kids versus poor kids. And as far as the sheriff goes, I don't think the sheriff cares where the money comes from. I think the sheriff wants these things, but I think the sheriff would be perfectly happy for the county to just fund them from local option sales tax, which would be allowed and should be done. But he just continues.
I firmly believe in the CRA because I need cameras at Lexington Terrace and other parks. The sheriff agrees with that. We did it last year. We have a massive problem with kids at Marino Court that are some of the poorest kids next to the only failing school that have homeless drug addicts that go to that park, and there's no security other than we have to call the sheriff. I just think it's just hard to believe. I just can't believe I'm fighting this hard to actually have kids have a little bit of safety. It's unbelievable, man, to me.
The problem is real. The solution is good. Lights, cameras, sidewalks. Do it through local option sales tax or county general revenues. If the problem is that acute, and it is, you can do it. You don't have to take from the Children's Trust that was meant to be for educational services for kids and use it to pay for, again, sidewalks and cameras and lights. Commissioner Ashley Hoffberger.
I would agree. We have a huge problem with not having enough money allocated for public safety. Sadly, Escambia County allocates only 9% of our budget to public safety, which is the lowest in the state.
Ouch.
So I think that's a problem that we all need to address during budget season.
I'd never heard that before. Wow. That's not great. Lindsay Cannon, the executive director of Escambia Children's Trust.
We're still all a part of this county, and we all have kids and we care about them. So one way or another, we're going to work together. But we got to start somewhere. We haven't started anywhere. We started with we won't fund your people anymore, go to the trust, and I wasn't there, but that's what happened. We're gonna not fund ELC, we're not gonna fund Chain Reaction, we're not gonna fund JWBS, we're not gonna fund any of that, go to the trust. And so the trust picked that up and even enriched some of those programs. But that was never a negotiation, that was never a phone call, and quite frankly, none of this has been that. It's just been emails and demands. And so although that is discouraging, we're up here taking all these very hard questions in an intimidating situation saying, we want to work together. What can we do? But if you don't want to do that, it's okay.
Oh, my God. I mean, I don't know if you know what she's saying in terms of what this means, but She's saying that the programs the Escambia Children's Trust is funding through that, you know, 10-year program that we enacted to vote to put a mill of tax into a fund, a $10 million fund that's going to fund children's programs. She's saying that the county used to do these programs like Chain Reaction and the other ones. I don't know them all so well. And when the Children's Trust passed, the county stopped funding them and said, go get your money from the Children's Trust. And the Children's Trust picked it up. It's like the whole lottery scam with education. The Children's Trust was supposed to be a tax increase so that we would have extra new stuff, not so that the county could shovel off its responsibilities to them and then use that money for something else. And then come back a couple years later and take money from them to pay for the things that should have been done public safety-wise. Like, my God. And she's right. She comes into this meeting. They're trying to work together and come up with an agreement to how to, you know, handle this money that legally the county can take for the CRA, but, you know, everybody else, the way they do it is they come to an agreement to use the money for programs and services, and that's really how it should be. The city of Pensacola is pursuing that same approach. And she's coming there and basically getting berated by Mike Kohler, who, again, Mike's a friend. I like Mike. He's a smart guy. He's an honest guy. He's just very, very triggered on this one subject into a, like, clenched jaw defense of their right to take the money to pay for the thing that we never voted for it to pay for. And so it's weird. It's weird. I'll come back to this in a second. John Pickens has got traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. Still rolling accident free right now. I-10, I-110, not showing any delays. If you're on Avalon Boulevard southbound, right at I-10, expect about a 7 to 10 minute congestion delay there. But other than that, we are looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. So Steve Stroberger, District 1 is going to weigh in here.
But we have a lot of unfunded CRA projects in Brownsville, Brancas, Oaksfield, Warrington, Palafox. There's a boatload of them here. And they all support safe play for family recreation, safe access for children, provides safety, security cameras, traffic calming, enhanced safety, improves walkability for safety, improving recreation for safety. I think that's a good spend. And I think you'd spend it that way if you could, but you can't. But we can. So I think we should. And I'm ready to make a motion when discussion's over.
Okay, but you can also spend local option sales tax money this way. You can also spend general revenue money this way. You do not have to have the Escambia Children's Trust money to do this. I agree, they're good projects. Lumen May?
Let's have a motion that we spend, you know, the two previous years, the third year, and have a five-year contract, because we're going to be back here in December, that we will spend that money on children and figure out how we can reallocate some dollars to do sidewalks.
Okay, the details here are a little tricky to understand, but the short version is, the first 2 years of the owed money is being held in a separate fund because they can't spend it because they're worried the county is going to try to take it through legal action. They don't want to give it to the county because the county took too long to ask and they think they don't owe it. Okay. The third year of money already got given to the county last year. It went to fund cameras in Montclair. Okay. The fourth year is the one that's up for discussion right now. And then subsequent years is the issue. What Lumen wants to do is he wants to take the first 2 years and the current year, 3 years, and put it towards the Summer Youth Employment Program, a good program that would serve kids that are at risk. I mean, this is not a terrible idea. This is an okay idea. And it's what the Children's Trust has expressed an interest in doing. And he's going to, you know, and they have some, you know, talking about that. And then back and forth about whether it's appropriate or not. And then, again, Steven Stroberger is going to weigh in. And I will tell you in advance, Ashley Hoffberger is about to have, like, the comment of the day. Okay, so pay attention.
We don't need an interlocal. I don't know why we're talking about it. I don't even know why we're negotiating this.
Well, to get services that the trust was actually formed to create. Anyway, that's why.
Why are we negotiating this at all? It's not operating income. It's tax revenue. And we can use it the way we need to. It's got to go in the CRAs. That's where it's got to go. So let's just do that.
You guys are all aware that we have money in LOST that we could use for these projects, right? Like, if it's that important for your districts, not only do we have it in LOST money, but you have it in your discretionary funds.
This is a statutory...
I'm just saying.
My hero. Yes! They're all talking about how vital the lights and the sidewalks and the parks and the streetlights and the cameras, how vital that is. Cool. We have millions of dollars in local option sales tax money all the time. millions and millions, tens of millions of dollars that we can use for exactly this out of our $800 million budget. Why are you claiming that they won't help the poor kids when you won't help the poor kids? I mean, she doesn't say it that way, but you can't wring your hands and play victim and say, why aren't you willing to give us your $500,000 out of a $10 million budget when we're not willing to spend $500,000 out of an $800 million budget? You do it. I hallelujah. I thought, thank God, somebody's got their head on their shoulders in this whole conversation.
But Ashley's right on that, Mike. And,
yes.
And that if we take those 3 years, we can hire kids from any district we want because the trust has a check for all of that amount. Once we bring that money into a CRA, it gets divvied out among all six or seven CRAs. That's not going to make an impact. It's not even going to be enough money to buy a camera and a light and monitor it.
And by the way, he's right about that. And it's not just $500,000 into a place. I think I actually wonder if the buying of the cameras in Montclair was not illegal, because the money's supposed to get dispersed across the CRAs by their share of it. You know, like Warrington is due $100,000 and Cantonment's due like $20,000 and, you know, that kind of thing. And that's why he's saying, like, we could put, you know, a sidewalk here for 48 feet and, you know, we could put three cameras over there or whatever. But again, this, so Lumen wants to do summer youth employment. Mike Kohler and Steve Strogberger want to do sidewalks and cameras and lights. The Children's Trust wants to do programs. They are willing to do the summer youth employment program because that sort of falls within their domain.
All right. Is there a motion, or are we moving
forward? I'll make a motion, Mr. Chairman, that we conditionally ask for all 3 years of the funding to go directly to youth programs, summer youth, after-school programs here at the city. At Escambia County. That's my motion.
And nothing for the CRAs?
That's him asking. And nothing for the lights and the cameras and the sidewalks.
So you're...
If that's what you want, Mike.
I mean, it's fair. You got your cameras. Why can't poor kids in Lexington get theirs? I mean, does their stand any different?
I support you. Yeah, absolutely, I support you.
Man.
I mean, they don't work in Montclair. I mean, if you want to pull some of the money for cameras, I was just trying to get to a happy compromise.
Your poor kids, my poor kids, you got your cameras. Why can't I have my cameras? Again, the money exists. If it's that big of a priority, you can take it from the county budget. There's enough if you make it a priority, right? And instead you're saying take it from somebody else where it wasn't really voted in for that reason. Now, he says he did vote for I don't remember us ever having the conversation about putting the Escambia Children's Trust tax on so that we can have sidewalks and cameras. That was not in any of my cognizance at the time. By the way, this is going to get worse before it gets better. This is the, like, you know, things have gotten to, you know, 11 on the amp when this is the question.
Allison, I got a different question, and I kind of alluded to this the other day. It's obvious this board's struggling with this. I know the voters are struggling with it. Is there a way for us to put this back on the ballot in 2026 as a referendum to see if the people actually want it?
Yes, there is.
Did you hear that? That's somebody. I didn't quite catch who that was. I'm not sure. That's somebody, because he's just threatening to destroy the whole program. He can't get his cameras. I mean, let's just put it back on the ballot. People vote it down. I think that's true. I think people would vote it down. I think that the controversy over the bad management in the first couple of years, the constant bickering with the county, the moderate to mid-level opposition to this in the first place because it was a tax increase, the worry that it wouldn't really be effective, like all the things, if you put it back on the ballot, I think people will vote it down. And it's a weird place to be where if he can't get his $500,000 for the things that he wants, then let's just lay waste to the whole thing. Let's just napalm the whole program. Give it to the voters. They'll ruin it. I mean, wow. Wow.
Why would we agree to that?
Oh, by the way, Lumen had proposed, again, his proposal is the two back years that are already owed, the 1 year current and 1 year forward, and if, you know, that's what we should do. That's the way we should go forward with it. And, you know, Mike Kohler continuing to say...
Poor kids, cameras.
probably 40 minutes on this right now, just trying to figure out how to get poor kids cameras. It's just hard to believe, man, that the board is that dug in over there. But man, I would just pass that and moved on down the road.
It's hard to believe that you are so dug in over this. That's what's weird, is the inability to see contrary ideas, different information, a different perspective on it, or whatever. And by the way, again, I support spending the money. You know, you come and ask me, you're a voter in Escambia County, Andrew, you believe in spending money on cameras and lights and sidewalks in the poor neighborhood? Yes! Do it! But let the Escambia Children's Trust do what it is supposed to do. And, you know, when Lumen makes his proposal, Mike's reaction is...
Why would we agree to that?
Well, because that would solve the problem.
So what if we were to deny the motion and go forward with the CRA under the conditions that their board comes back with a three-year plan? If not, we would put in the CRA at the next board meeting, because that would make them actually have to move on the board. And if they do that, then we could retract the CRA dollars.
So what he's saying is, let's vote to deny their to continue it, basically, their request for an exemption. They can vote to give us the 4 years, two back, one current, and one future. And if they won't, then we'll just take the money and use it our way. And that's what they landed on, and that got a 5-0 vote. And I honestly, as long as the Escambia Children's Trust Board goes along, that's a good outcome. That's an everybody wins outcome. Now, why it took us 45 minutes of all of this bickering and fighting and kind of obnoxious my poor kids versus your poor kids, I don't get why you don't get this kind of... It didn't. So, again, I think everybody involved in this conversation has the right goals, the right motives. Everybody wants to see our kids do better. It's a weird thing to get dug in on, to not be able to see the possibility that people wouldn't be excited about finding out that the money they thought was going to go for children's programs is going for sidewalks. 726 News Radio 92.3, John Pickens has traffic for us. John?
No accidents to report to you right now. Looks like I-10 between Pine Forest and Highway 29. Just a minor delay there. But let's see here. If you are on 98 westbound, headed toward the Garson Point Bridge, through that construction zone right there, I'm seeing about a 7 to 9 minute delay. Other than that, we are looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. Hey, if you need to buy a vehicle, you need to sell a vehicle. Honestly, Frontier Motors, we don't talk about it a lot because we talk about them as a great place to buy good quality used cars. They're also a great place to sell good quality used cars. You know, if you've got a car that's a year, two, or three old, and you want to get a top dollar for it, sell it to Frontier. It's easier than Facebook Marketplace. It's easier than any other way you're going to do it. They can, sell it on a consignment if you want. Okay, they don't have to. You can do whatever you want. Or you can just sell it to them outright. Either way, they need inventory. You need to sell a car. It's very simple. It only takes about 15 minutes. So Frontier is a great place not only to buy good quality used cars, but to sell good quality used cars, because the cars that you want to sell, somebody else want to buy. That's the idea. Frontier Motors, serving the Pensacola community for more than 25 years, behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway. Be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi.
Here's today's Strength for Life with your host, Pastor James C. Johnson.
One amazing example of strength is Esther. She famously proclaimed, "If I perish, I perish," as she prepared to go before the king on behalf of her persecuted people. She had such conviction that she was willing to lay down her own life for the sake of others. Her passion and purpose were deeply rooted in God's plan. Being strong in the Lord means finding His purpose for your life and pursuing it no matter the cost. Knowing God's plan for you doesn't have to be mystical. Actually, it should be biblical. Find your purpose in tenaciously telling others of God's love for them through the message of Christ's death and resurrection, which atones for our sins. Christian person, give your life to the faithful proclamation of the good news of Jesus Christ.
That was James C. Johnson. He serves as the pastor of North Stone Baptist Church in Pensacola, Florida. For more Strength for Life, please visit our website, strengthforlife.church.
My name is Ariel. I moved to the U.S. at 19. I spoke no English and I struggled finding job opportunities. Everything I have, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and getting my high school diploma at age 22.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Need an affordable medical clinic?
Go to a ProHealth location.
Need a walk-in or same-day appointment?
Go to a ProHealth location.
Need a $45 zero copay medical plan?
Go to ProHealthFL.com. ProHealth has always been known for being Pensacola's most trusted and affordable clinic and lab, but now ProHealth offers over 30 affordable ultrasounds too. You never need a doctor's order, and ProHealth allows you to pay with HSA or FSA funds for all their services. You can even schedule yourself at ProHealthFL.com. That's ProHealthFL.com.
The Dave Ramsey Show, weeknights 7 to 10 before WEAR-TV News on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Me.
Oh, we all need more Beaker. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning, Andrew. Two of the top aides for the mayor of Mexico City apparently have been killed in some type of a roadside attack there. Reports say that his private secretary and her advisor were killed on their way to work on Tuesday morning. Walmart pushing back against President Trump's comments about having to raise prices because of tariffs. The retail giant recently warned customers about potential price increases. Trump replied they should eat the tariffs. Walmart's CFO says the company has not seen price increases at this magnitude.
I tried eating tariffs the other day for lunch. Not very satisfying.
Good? Did you try salt?
No, it's almost like there's no taste to them whatsoever. Oh, and in other news...
Hey, what's happening, Norm?
It's a dog-eat-dog world, Sammy, and I'm wearing milk-bone underwear.
George Wentz, Norm, passed away at 76 yesterday.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. The House Rules Committee has been working since 1 a.m. at the Capitol on the Republicans' big tax and spending cut bill. Virginia Republican Morgan Griffith heard President Trump's in-person pitch yesterday and tells Fox,
I think he did change a few votes, but not all of them. And so we're still working, the Speaker is still working behind the scenes to get all the votes lined up.
Congressional Budget Office says the bill, without changes, adds $3.8 trillion to the debt through 2034. The Justice Department's opened an investigation into former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo.
Cuomo is being investigated for statements he made to lawmakers who were looking into his management of the COVID-19 pandemic while the virus was spreading through nursing homes. House Oversight Committee Chair James Comer, a Republican, recommended that Cuomo, a Democrat, be charged with lying in his referral to the Justice Department.
Fox's Tanya J. Powers in New York, where Cuomo's running for mayor. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 7:31 at News Radio 92.3. It is 81 degrees right now. We've got mostly cloudy skies here in Pensacola. We'll get a total check on our forecast with Brooke Richardson and Channel 3 in just a few minutes. Big news coming out of the Pensacola International Airport this week.
Huge crowds all weekend, and that culminated yesterday with the busiest day in the history of the airport. We had about 15,400 total passengers in and out.
That's Pensacola Mayor D.C. Reeves, and he says that record was set Monday. Their previous record-holding day was set July of last year. The city attributes the travel rush to Gulf Shores Sand in My Boots Country Music Festival. Of course, that was held last weekend. Mayor Reeves says they had more than 762 TSA screenings in just 1 hour on Monday, and he says 600 is considered the maximum for the airport normally. Despite the heavy volume of travelers, the maximum wait time, according to Mayor Reeves, was just over a half an hour. The average wait time, only 13 minutes. An investigation continues after a woman's body was found in a vehicle located in the Publix parking lot on 9th and Bayou yesterday. That discovery was made on Tuesday afternoon. Now, so far, we don't have a whole lot of details on this, and there's no information on her cause of death. Four people have been arrested in connection with a violent robbery that happened during a meetup over a Facebook Marketplace transaction. Police say this happened Tuesday afternoon. 20-year-old Deshaun Simpkins and 18-year-old Terrence Mobley faced charges of robbery and resisting arrest. 19-year-old Curtis Dale facing similar charges. And 22-year-old Asante Mason was a passenger in a suspect vehicle in this case, and he's charged with possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. Police say the suspects attacked the victim when he arrived to buy a cell phone and then stole his belongings. Fortunately, the items were recovered. Authorities say they are still searching for the driver of the suspect vehicle involved in that robbery. Now, it's been a busy week for the Escambia Sheriff's Office. Sunday, they nabbed a suspect accused in a string of armed robberies that lasted over a year and a half. Then Monday, detectives were called to a homicide investigation on Citrus Street.
What people may not understand is that the same detectives that work, the homicide also were working this armed robbery. They work some very serious crimes, and usually it doesn't happen back to back like this. But in this particular case, they were pulled from one to the other. But we have all the available resources working on the active homicide investigation.
Escambia County Sheriff Chip Simmons, and he says all available investigators are now looking into this shooting, which is being investigated as a homicide. Family members identified the victim to Channel 3 as being Doug White. They say the shooting was surprising as White was friendly and funny, and they say he didn't bother anybody. A memorial is now located at that crime scene. Well, District 4 Commissioner Ashley Hoffberger, Escambia County Commissioner Ashley Hoffberger, holding a town hall meeting next week. And if you want to attend that, they're going to talk about traffic and parking issues on the island. That'll be at the SRIA office on May 28th. And that's just before their next Island Authority meeting. And county staff will also be in attendance at that to address any comments or concerns from residents there. It's 7:35 at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our traffic on the fives with John Pickens.
That's right. No accidents to let you know about, but if you are on Avalon Boulevard traveling southbound toward I-10, expect about a 7 to 10 minute congestion delay. Also, Highway 29 southbound leading up to 9 Mile Road is experiencing about a 5 to 7 minute delay. And 98 westbound approaching the Garcon Point Bridge experienced about a 7 to 10 minute delay there through the construction zone and congestion. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the five.
Thank you very much, John. Now, Brooke Richardson from Channel 3 has our forecast.
There will be a 40% chance of some showers and thunderstorms today, high near 89 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 68. For Thursday, mostly sunny skies, high near 89. Thursday night, temperatures dropping near 68 degrees. On Friday, nice sunny weather with a high near 88. Friday night, temperatures dropping near 70 degrees. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. 82 degrees, partly cloudy skies. Your next news at 8. Breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
I'm Nicole Murray with your money now. XPeng shares jumped 6% after the company beat first quarter earnings expectations. The firm said it expects to deliver between 102 and 108,000 of its electric cars in the second quarter of this year. XPeng shares have rallied 66% this year thanks to strong deliveries. President Trump announced his administration has selected the architectural design for a Golden Dome missile defense system to protect the U.S. from foreign threats. Trump said the project will cost roughly $175 billion, though funding has not yet been secured, and the dome should be fully operational before January of 2029. Palo Alto Networks reported better than expected earnings and revenue for the latest quarter, but its gross margin was below estimates. Sales in the company's fiscal third quarter grew 15% from nearly $2 billion a year earlier. The stock dropped 4% upon the news. Futures are moderately lower. Tuesday, the Dow Industrials lost 114. The NASDAQ down 72. That's your money now.
Visit Pensacola is home for all things Pensacola. I'm Darren Schaefer, CEO of Visit Pensacola. Join us on the Pensacola Expert Panel this week as we discuss what is next for our community. This summer, get tips on the Blue Angels, beach time, and ways to help make sure your guests don't miss a thing. Friday at 9:30, let us show you the way to beach on News Radio 92.3.
Is your home your dream home? Or does it at least have the potential to be your dream home? Maybe you need to make a change. Maybe you just need new appliances. If that's the case, you need to check out Topps Appliance in Milton. Locally owned and operated, Topps Appliance has just what you need to turn your home into your dream home. Top-of-the-line freezers, refrigerators, dishwashers, stoves, plus washer and dryer combos. Topps Appliance carries the name brands that you know and trust, including GE, Hotpoint, Speed Queen, and so much more. And they have a full installation and service department, something the big box stores just don't offer. They also keep most items in stock so you can take it home today. Turn your ordinary home into your dream home with an appliance upgrade from Topps Appliance, Highway 90 in Milton, just east of Stewart Street.
Hey, Escambia. Today, ECUA is talking trash.
Specifically, bulk waste.
July 1st, 2023, bulk service changed to call for pickup. Schedule a pickup by calling the ECUA customer service department anytime before 2 p.m. on the day prior to your normal pickup day. Bulk pickup is still included at no additional charge. Schedule a free bulk waste or special pickup for construction debris for an additional fee. Call customer service at 850-476-0480. More information at ecua.fl.gov.
Know what to throw, 850.
In the world of payroll and HR services, things can get complicated. There are so many moving parts in business. At Avalon HR, we understand these complications and have your back. Join us this Wednesday at 10 o'clock on the Pensacola Expert Panel as we guide you through the complicated world of payroll and HR services. Running a business is busy work. Allow Avalon HR to work with you. Join us this Wednesday on the Pensacola Expert Panel at 10 on News Radio 1620 92.3 FM.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
News Radio Pensacola has you covered no matter where you are or how you like to listen. Tune into our frequencies on 92.3 FM, 95.3 FM, and AM 1620 for the latest breaking news, local updates, and in-depth analysis. Can't be near a radio? No problem. Stream us live on our website or through our convenient app. Available for download on your mobile device. Plus, with our smart device integration, you can ask your virtual assistant to play News Radio 92.3 and we'll be right there with you. It's News Radio Pensacola.
Question about not only being Pensacola's airport, but our region's airport. We were able to yet again reaffirm that on Monday. We had huge crowds all weekend, and that culminated yesterday with the busiest day in the history of the airport. We had about 15,400 total passengers in and out. And the second busiest day of all time was July 7th of last year.
Just some random Monday in May, and we have the busiest day in the history of the airport. Oh, my God. I don't know what it's going to be like when we actually get into the vacation season coming up soon. I will say the 12th Avenue lot, the one that they just paved, earlier this year, last year, I forget now, it was jacked, totally full on Sunday. The Grassy Knoll lot up by the fire station north of Langley, that was not full, but, you know, just wait. Joining us now, we have D.C. Reeves, the mayor of Pensacola. Mr. Mayor, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Thank you, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
I still cannot believe, we must be looking at record-breaking summer this year, and I just, you know, we can't build that second terminal fast enough.
Yeah, if you recall, the big issues we have with TSA, I think it's a perfect example. Last year, we had to, thanks to Rick Scott, really urged the TSA to get, we had, I think, 8 emergency folks come in like the next day. And then after the assessment was done, the assessment was basically, oh, yeah, it looks like you need, 2 more supervisors, 8 more people, and a couple more machines. You know, it's kind of one of those, not because they didn't want to help, but it was like we've grown so quickly that even, it caught the TSA by surprise, frankly. I mean, to put it, I guess, as simply as possible, I think that's what happened last year. So ever since then, we've been in, we had that rough patch, right, in the spring, summer-ish last year. And then ever since then, all in all, and again, this is something we measure by the hour. So I'm certainly proud of our team. Actually, when I flew to I'm in Fort Myers today for a CareerSource Florida board meeting. When I flew out yesterday, I had an airport employee stop me and say, did you see what happened? They were very proud of the idea of how many people came through and how good a job they did. And they should be.
That's
not only our TSA staff, but our airport staff as well.
Yeah, I mean, processing 762 screenings in an hour when full capacity is 600 is pretty good. 31-minute delay at max, average delay of 13 minutes for – I mean, that's – again, those are all for the biggest day in the history of the airport. That would have been the airport would have shut down last year under these circumstances a year ago. But, yeah, no, it's largely been remedied. And great credit to you, to the airport, to TSA, to everybody responding to the crisis. You said you're in Fort Myers for CareerSource Florida. You're there to, be on a panel to talk about, young adult flight from municipalities. Is that it?
Yeah, so I'm part of the CareerSource Florida board, which for folks who don't know what that is, that's the workforce development efforts in the state of Florida. Think about CareerSource Escarosa, you hear that around our neck of the woods. That's one chapter of the larger state organization. So It's run through the Department of Commerce, and so I'm on a panel with Alex Kelly, the head of Florida Commerce, and a couple others from the Florida Chamber. And it's to have a conversation. You know, Florida Chamber just came out with some data that said that we're actually seeing a net zero migration with ages 25 to 34. Now, it's probably too early to say that's a trend, but what you can say is, you know, remember, we pump our chest, rightfully so, here in the state of Florida about how many people are moving here post-COVID. But here's this one subset, and the interesting conversation is why. And one, is it going to actually become a trend, or is it just an anomaly? And two is why.
Is that a decline or an increase? Like, what has it been previously if it's at zero now?
Oh, it's been increasing.
Okay, I just wanted to be sure that was right. Okay.
Way more people coming to Florida. But the weird, when we just got this recent data, the Florida Chamber does a great job of measuring these things. When we just got this recent data, the age bracket of 25 to 34 last year was zero. We had just as many people leaving as we had coming in.
Got it.
Within that subset. And so there's just a little, I mean, again, alarm is not the right word, but it's to speculate as to why that is. Is it cost of living? Is it insurance? Is it health care? Is it child care, which is obviously something I'm going to be talking about down here, because that's the age where you have young children. And you know, do you need to be able to afford child care and a house and insurance? And is it easier to do in the states that people are leaving to in that age bracket, which is South Carolina, North Carolina, Georgia, and Texas? Is it easier to make ends meet in those states versus Florida? So interesting conversation. Glad to be part of it, and we'll see what comes of it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, big concerns, as you said, everything from the price of housing to the availability of childcare to the cost of home insurance or car insurance or medical insurance, or, you know, like everything. It seems like it costs so much.
Right.
You mentioned it, but I do want to make sure people are aware. Child care access is something that you have convened kind of a summit on, and the idea is to talk with the people who work in this space and see what can the city do either to facilitate, to create, or to get out of the way so that we can have more child care providers so that people can work, right?
That's right. And the way I put it is there's two truths about child care access. Number one is we all agree in our community. I've never had a person say we got too much child care access. I don't think that's happened. Same kind of like housing. And then secondly is child care has a positive impact on quality of life, as we all know. That's common sense. It's got an impact. Quality child care has an impact on education, which we've talked about in many different iterations in our community for years and years, and we know that that's a struggle for us, education, young education. And last is an economic development. So if you don't have kids, you don't even care about the first two. Although what you should care about is we want talented people to move here. Then we need access to child care at all levels. And again, this is not just somebody may say, hey, listen, I don't want to subsidize another program. We're talking about like housing, child care access at all levels. We have an access problem for people that are willing to pay full market rate that don't have enough places to put their kids so they can go be an engineer or an architect or a construction worker. So, to me, taking on childcare is really it's one of those rare topics that you get to actually kind of try to solve or improve three issues in one. And that's why I think it's a very interesting thing. And we want to partner with the Children's Trust on that in terms of service.
Right.
We have some buildings that we want to put in play. And so, we have about 39 people RSVP'd. I think this will be the largest collection of childcare folks from childcare operators.
That's good. That's good. You get a lot of voices with a lot of experience.
Excited.
Yeah, no, that'll be fantastic. Hang on for me for just a second, Mr. Mayor. We've got John Pickens with traffic for us. John?
No accidents to report to you right now. I-10, I-110 are flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5.
And not to put a giant exclamation mark underlined and bolded or anything, but your comment is this is what you are doing with the Children's Trust. The city of Pensacola has established a very functional relationship with the Children's Trust to fund, in this case, you know, child care and child care access, which perfectly fits within their mission of preparation and within your mission of doing all the three things you said. And I've been talking this morning about the struggles at the county, but so it's good to see. It's good to see that the city is doing this, a little bit more effectively. You were talking about spaces and activities, and I don't really feel like I understand the Southern Youth Sports Association, CISA, plan for Legion Field. What's going on here? You talked about it yesterday, but I don't understand it.
Yeah, so as you know, there's the Theopolis May Center is already at Legion Field, and we have an arrangement with Southern Youth Sports Association in terms of getting shared use of that building. That I think that was constructed during the Hayward administration. flash forward to now, that CISA has gone out and privately funded the, what's going to be the Rafferty Center, you know, about $3 million for a building, privately funded, not asking other than the dirt, not asking anything of the city. So, you know, it's
at Legion Field, though, like at that same location?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
Contiguous. That, right, contiguous on empty property there. So our contribution to that and what I'm proposing to council on Thursday is that we have a up to maintenance number that we've actually gone and measured with our maintenance and facilities director of what we think that would be. And, you know, if our contribution over 40 years of time and we have an opportunity where the city is not having to pay for the building at all, because I was asked the question, well, Mayor, you know, you're very serious about not wanting to maintain more things. Yeah, well, there's two different conversations. One is maintaining aging infrastructure that we neglected, that we're on the hook for no matter what. And then another is someone coming to us and saying, we would like to fund the entire thing. You know, there's going to be maintenance at Hollis T. Williams. There's going to be maintenance at Fricker Center when we redo that. But those, we've gotten a combined $50 million of outside money to help construct. So those are two different conversations. And the impact on kids. So, you know, we clarified. I know there's been some heartburn with council members over the shared agreement at the existing structure. We clarified some of that, you know, in both the old and the new agreements. And at the end of the day, we've got an organization that's been here a long time that helps support kids. And they're coming in to build a building to work on that support and to give more opportunity for the youth of the city. So I certainly support it. We'll see what the council's conversation is on Thursday and go from there.
Well, it seems like a big win for everybody. So, you know, it sounds wonderful. Quickly, I just wanted to give people, we haven't talked about this much. I think we might have mentioned it in passing when you were first setting it up. But the Artist in Residence program, when this was first announced,
yeah,
I loved the idea that you'd kind of have, you know, an art major type person who would be in charge of facilitating, informing, not necessarily directing and deciding, but just helping us have a better eye towards beautification across the city, whether it's street art or murals or whatever. That makes sense to me. Is that where are we at?
Yeah. Well, when I came in and you know, I always remind folks, in my previous life as a brewery owner, I might have been the biggest mural customer. You know, I had one, I've had several commissioned at my own businesses. And so I've always had a interest in that, not just murals, in art. And,
yeah.
And when I got here, we had had a, through ARPA funding, and had a full-time position paid for. But we really weren't getting the productivity out of that job that needed to happen. And we wanted to be better stewards of the dollar. I didn't foresee this as a full-time position that the taxpayer needs to be funding. But what we were missing without any representation is someone comes and says, well, we want to put this statue in a park, or mm-hmm. we don't really have that expert seat at the table. And so this is the happy medium that we found, and it helps us engage the art community. It's not just a city employee. This is someone that's integrated in the art community. And what I hope is, and Danny DeCastro is doing it now, and she's amazing. And her job one is to actually set up the program. I mean, so it's sustainable moving forward. And what we would want to see is every year or 2 years that it be a different artist and a different medium, you know, and that they have some type of representation. So not only can they help represent the city in these conversations and at, you know, about festivals, about all those things where we need some expertise in the room, but it also allows us to do a better job of engaging the art community. Because when we go travel, what do we see? We go look for that. We're attracted to beautiful places and
right.
beautiful art and all of that. So we can better integrate that into our city by having some representation. So it was just about finding that right niche. I don't think zero representation is good. I also don't think the taxpayer that we necessarily need or are even ready to have somebody full time only working on this. So we're going to take that stepping stone approach and try to use money wisely and see how this goes. So
she had
a big meeting in May 12th with all the artists. So it's been good.
No, I'm a big believer. I mean, I love, as you say, these are the things you notice when you go to a community. It's placemaking. I noticed the murals at PSC when they put up the new art there, and when we're driving along the road or see a statue or whatever, you know, the Bensons put one in right. the park, you know, all of that stuff. I love it. More is better, in my opinion. We always like to end with the lightning round. Quick questions, quick answers. What song in the life of DC Reeves do you believe you have heard the most times, if you had to take a guess?
Oh, man. Golly, I think you stumped me. The first thing I think of is which annoying song when I was a when Caroline was like 1 or 2 years
exactly,
old.
Exactly, right? You know, kid songs.
Did I not get out of my head? You know, something from Daniel the Tiger or something probably would be the one that stuck in my head for life.
All right, fair enough.
But, no, I don't know. What was yours?
Oh, so I've heard Jack and Diane, I think, more times than any other song. Not counting like Star Spangled Banner, you know, for example, which is a pretty good answer too. But for whatever reason, Jack and Diane is the ubiquitous song on, you know, 80s and 90s radio when I'm driving. Would you rather be behind a bad driver, or would you rather pass them and then be in front of them and have them risk running into the back of you? Which one is your preference?
I just go ahead and get out in front of them. I feel like my speed's more predictable than theirs. So I don't know. I heard right? you talking about this, but I didn't hear your answer. I'm gonna go ahead and get out in front of them.
I'm a passer. I'm a passer. I'd rather pass them. Yeah. And, you know, look back in contempt as I'm passing. And then the last one is, and this is actually relevant to your job. So okay, here goes. In your opinion, what's the worst parking lot in Pensacola? The parking lot you avoid because the parking lot experience itself is so frustrating.
Ooh, parking lot I avoid. Well, listen, Andrew, parking's so convenient throughout the city of Pensacola that it's going to be very difficult.
I love all of my parking spaces. They're so beautiful. It's so easy.
Parking spot in the city. Yeah, it's going to have to be in the county or in Santa Rosa or something.
All right, I'll give you the answer, and you'll know it's the right answer as soon as I say it. Fresh Market.
Okay, what is it?
Fresh Market, ninth and Airport.
Oh yeah, getting in and out of that one's a tough one.
No, it's a beast.
You're right.
Yeah, no, that's and everybody agreed that was the absolute worst one. So, hey, while you're fixing problems that aren't your responsibility, if you can get them to do parking better at that, I mean, everybody will love you. Mayor DC Reeves, always a pleasure, sir. We look forward to city council meeting tomorrow night. Thank you as always for the time and safe travels back from Fort Myers.
All right, thanks.
7:55 News Radio 92.3. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
That's right. No accidents to report, but if you are on I-10 eastbound, right around the Highway 29 exit, and before you get to I-110, we're seeing some major delays in that area. So just be aware of that, and it's starting to back up even more right now. So we'll get more information on that. Other than that, we are looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Hey, if you're thinking about making a real estate transaction, you want somebody who's going to solve all the way through to closing, right? It doesn't help to get 90% and then have wasted everybody's time. You want to get to the end result. Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty, they closed 165 homes last year. They closed 175 homes. Actually, those are all sales. That's not even buys, right? But they a lot of homes. And you might think, well, what if I'm buying a new house? Why would I need a realtor? Hey, they can negotiate for you. Okay, builders are motivated. And so they can get things for you that you might not be able to get on your own or might not even know to ask for on your own. Plus, when you take ownership, are you going to ask for every little crack and dimple to be repaired? She will. She will red tape queen that whole thing. Blue tape queen that whole. She loves it. She believes in it. And she will help you get what you deserve. That's just one example of why you want to have somebody who understands this process and will work hard on your behalf, whatever the situation is. Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty, 786-3996.
Join the Pensacola Expert Panel today. At 10:30, as Bess Marks from Lazy Boy joins the show, talking about upcoming events at all three Gulf Coast locations, Pensacola, Spanish Fort, and Mobile, how to incorporate Lazy Boy's free in-home design service with recliners, sofas, accessories, and artwork to make your home look just like a picture out of a magazine.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions, 850-437-1620.
Gun Show, this weekend in Crestview, Florida. Hundreds of guns, knives, ammo, coins, and more. This is a buy-sell trade event. Private sales and sellers welcome. It's a brand new event located at 410 West James Lee Boulevard, Crestview, Florida. Saturday, 9 to 4, and Sunday, 10 to 3. Admission just $10 a person. Kids under 14 are free. Discounts for law enforcement, military, firefighters, and first responders. For more information, go to usagunshowsfl.com.
It's the Always Sunny Show. When you're ready to throw a barbecue, it's Always Sunny's. Join us on Friday at 9 with me, Eldon Scott, to hear about barbecue events in the Pensacola community, win some amazing prizes, and hear from community leaders and how Sunny's Barbecue has built a strong Pensacola for 40 years. Pep Talk with Eldon Scott, spreading the spirit of barbecue far and wide. Remember to tell Sunny that Eldon sent you.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Stream us online at newsradio923.com or download the News Radio Pensacola app.
Beef, it's what's for dinner.
It's going down for real.
7:59, News Radio 92.3. David Wayne is in the newsroom with a headline or two for us. David?
Well, good morning. Was that Sam Elliott on
it
the
It was,
beef?
Yeah, Sam Elliott, the voice of beef.
I vaguely remember him doing those commercials. Well, multiple tornadoes left a trail of damage across the southeast on Tuesday. There were confirmed touchdowns in Alabama, Tennessee, and Illinois as all that severe weather moved through the region. Millions of holiday travelers are going to be enjoying cheaper gas anyway over the Memorial Day weekend. Gas, but he says the national average will be about $3.08. That's the cheapest Memorial Day weekend gas since 2021.
When you say cheaper, all I hear in my head is wise, good, cheap, gas.
You're listening to News Radio.